Okay. Question on the floor, related questions. How does a person deal with a feeling of guilt after he's done an Avera? And second question, which I guess is slightly contradictory, if a person is Naslo Keheter, what is his next move? Now, if it's Naslo Keheter, he probably doesn't feel so guilty. The interesting thing is that's not necessarily the case. People could have both at the same time. I think when a person is dealing with a difficult nisayon, the most important thing to keep in mind is that, you know, again, I don't know the answers to these questions about, you know, how is the Kadosh Baruch Hu judge it and what happens in the end and are you about tshuva and you're not. I do know this, that if a person engages in the struggle against the Yetzer Hara, he's going to come out ahead. And, you know, Bali Musa tell us that if a person has a nisayon and he resists the nisayon for a period of time, so he wants to do an aver and he has this temptation and he resists and resists 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and then he succumbs and he does the aver. So what do you look at that? What happened? We typically look at that as a failure. You know, he put up a struggle, he fought against the Yetzer, but he lost. That's not how Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at it. He had 3 minutes of victory, and then he lost. Every moment that he resisted the Yetzer Hara is a mitzvah. It's a schar. A person who is namela avera and he refrains from doing it, it's a mitzvah. So he fought the Yetzer Hara for 10 seconds, that's a mitzvah. Another 10 seconds is another mitzvah. He's got 3 minutes of mitzvahs, and then he did an avera. Now let's make a calculation. Again, I don't know how exact calculation, I'm not suggesting I know, but just a little bit, what Chazal tell us. Chazal tell us, Lefum Tzar Agra, Lefum Gam L'Shichna, that the more difficult the Nisayon is, the less the Aver is if you give in. The more difficult the Nisayon is, the greater the mitzvah if you resist. So it's quite possible that this guy's ahead of the game. So he looks at himself, I have this guilt, I failed. And the reality is, it wasn't a complete success, because he did fail at the end, he did do the Aver, it wasn't a complete success, but it wasn't a complete failure either, and it might have been a greater success than a failure. Maybe not, maybe yes. He could be ahead of the game. I often say over a vort that I heard in the name of Rav Volvi, I once said over to the Rosh Hashiva, and the response I got was he agreed with the content. He did not say he agreed with the pshat in the Medrash. So I'm not sure that there should agree with the pshat, but he agreed with the message. But there's a pasuk that says, Sheva yipal tzaddik v'kam. Tzaddik falls down 7 times and he gets up. And one of the perushim in the Medrash says, Zu mechemes hayetzer. So Rav Volbi said, so what happened? He's fighting the Yetzer and he fails 7 times, and the 8th time he gets up and he wins. So a guy who loses 7 out of 8 battles at the Yetzer Hara, what do you call him? Tzaddik or a Rasha? I would call him a Rasha, 7 out of 8. And the Pasuk calls him a Tzaddik. You know why? This Cheshbon. If it's a difficult Nisayon, and you failed 7 times, each time you failed is an Avera. But on the scale of things, it's a little bit less of an Avera because it was very difficult. The one time you succeeded is an enormous mitzvah because it was so difficult. You might be a tzaddik, not a tzaddik gomer. That's for sure not a tzaddik. So it's very important when a person, one of the atzas hayetzer is to get a person down and make him feel that he's a failure. And if you keep the right perspective, that's not the case. A person, as long as you're engaged in the struggle, if a person gives up and doesn't fight and just comes whatever he feels like doing, he has a, you know, that's much more serious. But if you engage in the struggle, you're ahead of the game and you might be a tzaddik. Wouldn't it be terrible to go through your whole life thinking you're Russia and then discover you're a tzaddik? But you never know. There are a lot of surprises up there. So the pshat is, that's the key. You know, in terms of the Nasal Keheter, so really the only etzah that I know of is what the Rabbeinu Yonah says. And it's kind of also paradoxical. Because if you know the Rabbeinu Yonah, the beginning of Shari Tshuva, near the beginning of Shari Tshuva, he asks the Stirim Psukim. One pasuk says, "Umo Deva Ozev Yerucham." So moda, which is vidui, is really charata. So charata comes before the azivas achayit. And then you have other pesukim that say the azivas achayit comes before the charata. So what's going on? So Rabbeinu Yonah explains that if a person does an occasional avera, so the charata comes before the azivas achayit. If a person does an avera continuously, it's not as low keheter, he can't have charata. Because it doesn't seem, it's not so kehet, you can't really have charata. So you first have to have azivas achayit. Now, think about it a little bit, and it's very, very eiskehalten, not that he needs my askama. When a person does a sporadic avera, he doesn't do this avera regularly, he happened to do it one time. What's his feelings about that avera? He thinks it's the wrong thing to do, and he never does it. So why did he do it that one time then? If he never does this avera, why did he do it? It's kasha maisa. Yetzer hara got him. It was able to get him in a moment of weakness. So how do you stop doing that? I just went, 47 years without doing this avera. And now I did it once. So how do you have aziva sachet? What do you mean aziva sachet? Where was I for the last 47 years? I never did the avera. Now I go another 47 years without doing the avera. And then he does it again when he's 94 years old. So was that Aziva Sachet? So how do you stop a chait that's sporadic? So what is Aziva Sachet? Says the Rambam, the Odea Talumos. Kadosh Baruch Hu can be Meir, who knows your heart and knows your soul, that if you had the same Nisayon in the same circumstance, the same situation, you wouldn't do it again. The only way you could have Aziva Sachet is through Charata. If a person has a strong feeling of charata and regret that I wish I didn't do it, then he probably won't do it again. And that will fortify himself not doing it. So by definition, charata comes before azivas achayit. There is no such thing as azivas achayit except alidei charata. When it's a regular chayit, frequent chayit, you will not appreciate what's wrong with that chayit until you stop. So how are you supposed to stop if you don't think there's anything wrong with it? So says Rabbeinu Yonah, you only have charata after azivas achayit. So what propels you to azivas achayit? Why should you stop if to you it's a heter? So I think clearly the pshat is, it's not really, really keheter. There's a psychological relationship that you have with this avera that has changed. If you never did it, there's a certain barrier, there's a certain distance. When you break that barrier and you repeat a chayit, it doesn't exist anymore. So you relate to that action the same way you relate to an action which is mutter, but you don't really, really think it's mutter. So you can have some level of charata. I'd like to be a better person. Maybe it's because you think, I think a great example is Lashon Hara, because that's how we all relate to Lashon Hara. None of us really think, we know the Lashon, except in extreme circumstances, sometimes we recognize it's really an avera. But what do we normally, how do we relate to Lashon Hara? If you hear about a person, the Chafetz Chaim never spoke Lashon Hara, so what do we say? Wow! What a tzaddik. They're going to write books about him. Oh, they already did. Okay. More books about him. I'll tell you the story about the books about the Chafetz Chaim. Nothing to do with the subject. But many moons ago, when I was still in Florida, Rabbi Chain and I went fundraising in Atlanta. And our host, who was a very friendly guy, said, there's this new family that moved into the community. I don't know anything about him except for the fact that he bought this big fancy house. They must have money. And he dives in the shul. So maybe you should go see him. So we did. And we came and we started talking to him. He was from South America. Now let me just see if I remember correctly. I think he was from Venezuela and his wife was from Costa Rica or vice versa. So we come in. We had to wait for a while in his office, but during the day we had not much to do anyway, so we finally come in, and we're talking to him, and he's, doesn't seem to be particularly impressed, and we mentioned that we're an affiliate of Chafetz Chaim, and he said, Chafetz Chaim? He was a great man. I was just reading a book about him. How did Yeshiva get the name of the Chafetz Chaim? He says, well, the founder of the Yeshiva was a great nephew of the Chafetz Chaim. He says, oh, wow, Chafetz Chaim. So you just read a book about the Chafetz Chaim. He says, I'll tell you what, if you have a student from Venezuela or Costa Rica who can't pay tuition, I'll pay his tuition for him. I'll pay you the tuition. So we said, well, at that time we actually did have a student from Costa Rica, but he was a full tuition payer. So that was out. So he said, well, we don't really have that. We have a guy from Costa Rica who pays tuition. But we do have a couple of students from Argentina who haven't paid, who can't pay tuition. So, okay, I'll give you half the tuition. So that's what he did. It's because he read this book of the Chavetz Chaim. So we look at a person who doesn't speak Lashon Hara as some kind of Midas Chasidus. That's what Itzel Petterberger says. We look at most Averis as Hedar Midas Chasidus. But we would like to be Chasidim. We would like to be better. We would like them to write books about us too. So there is a certain motivation. The motivation is to improve. Motivation could be Hakaras HaTov, Takarish Baruch Hu, to get better. But the motivation isn't really true Harata. Because at some level, we don't relate to it as something that should be out of our lives. It's not part of us. It's separate and different from us. So you have some kind of a Harata. There's some kind of a desire. And we have to work on that. But as long as you're engaged in the struggle, you could get there. It may take a while, but there is the ability to improve. So to get the total perspective is that it is a struggle. Certain things that we are chronic violators is a struggle. But we shouldn't have the unrealistic expectation that we're going to get up one morning and decide to stop, and then we're going to stop. I don't know, maybe it happens sometimes. You know, Chazal say, Yesh kon olam v'sha'achas. But you look in the stories in Chazal, they all die. It seems to be a deadly process. Most people are kon olam one step at a time. And it takes a while. So what does that mean? I'm allowing myself to do averus? No, it means you fight and you struggle as best you can. You're not always going to be successful. But every struggle and every fight is a success. So you have some failures too. You might still be a tzaddik. And you keep doing that until you reach the level of Zivas Achay, then you could look back and experience a true Harata that would immunize you against any future, Mechshalim. Then your day Talumas could be made, that would never happen again. But it's a long process, there's a lot of steps along the way. And we could be in pretty good shape without being perfect. And it's an important thing to know, perfection is deadly. People striving for perfection get nowhere. You could strive for perfection in the long term, must say you give mice and mice elbows, but not, tomorrow morning. It's a long-term goal. Maybe you will get there. I shouldn't say you never get there, but if you try to get there tomorrow, I don't think you're going to get there, unless you die. It is a difficult thing to understand the perspective that a person engaged in the struggle against the Yetzirah is already winning a lot, and maybe he's winning more than he's losing. And if you keep doing that, you'll get better and better and make step and go step by step. And, eventually, perhaps you will reach the level of perfection. And if not, you could get pretty good. You could get quite a nice accomplishment.
Rebbe, is it that we can, even if we don't necessarily, we still do Avera sometimes, but we try to, is it like saying that we try to push off doing Avera as long as possible, so, and still we can say we're still a good person even though we're not perfect?
That's true, and you'll do less Avera if you do that, and sometimes you'll win, but you can't say just because I'm not reaching perfection that's not worth the struggle. It is worth the struggle, and Avada, nobody's saying that, okay, it's okay to speak a little bit of Lashon Hara the day. But if you're speaking Lashon all the time and your decision is, okay, either go cold turkey or forget about it, that's not fair to yourself. Because you're not going to probably be able to go cold turkey and then you're not going to do anything. But if you engage in the struggle and you speak a little bit less Lashon Hara, if it's a Raya's related issue, whatever the temptation might be, there are many strong Yetzer Haras in the world. And a person just says to himself, since I can't be perfect, it's useless, it's not true. It's useful, and you'll take one step today, you'll take another step tomorrow, and then another step after that. And eventually you get there. Some faster, some slower. But you're engaged in the struggle, you're ahead of the game. So that's the critical thing. And if a person, even if he doesn't succeed all the time, he's succeeding for the time that he's succeeding. It's a very worthwhile endeavor. It's interesting, I give a Navi share for Balabatim in Queens, We recently came across this, that when the Asar Sfatim were exiled, so one of the Pesukim, the Mefarshim explained, that Kadosh Baruch Hu sent Nevi'im, and it says it didn't have any effect Lefi Sha'a. In other words, they came and it didn't make any roshim, and that was the time to send them into Galus. It's mashma, but if they would have come and they listened to the Navi, you're right, and then an hour later they're back to their old ways, or a day later, Hashem would have waited. That's something happened. You know, they just responded for that. And you know, Eliyahu Har Carmel was this gewaldig, unbelievable thing with a nation. Everyone said Hashem Hu Elokim. We say that at the end of Yom Kippur. This was earth shattering. Do you know how long the impact lasted? Roughly 24 hours. Mefarshim say that Izebel, who was the evil wife of Ahav, when she heard what happened, Eliyahu killed the Nevi'im, sent him a message, by this time tomorrow, I'm going to get you like you got them. So Mefarshim said, why by this time tomorrow? If you wanted to kill him now. She couldn't. Because Ahav and all of Klal Yisrael were on his side. But I said, by tomorrow at this time, I'll be able to do it. And Eliyahu agreed with her, and that's why he ran away. So what was he doing this all for? Do you know what it means? That Klal Yisrael did tshuva for 24 hours? Maybe that's why we're still here. So even Lefi Sha'a is worth it. That doesn't mean that that's our goal. Our goal is to get the permanent, but do not discount the value of every step that we take, of every resistance that we make, or every small victory, every little skirmish. You don't underestimate. You have no idea how great it might be in the eyes of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that is, I think, an important attitude, and that helps a person continue. Don't let the Yetzer get us to give up. That's the worst thing.
Isn't Rebbe said that perfection is dangerous? So if we try to be perfect, then we're going to be, even if it's in the long term, we might be striving for too much.
No, in the long term it's okay, because you have to have a target, you have to have a goal, but you're not expecting to get there today. So that the idea is that there's a long term goal, is Mosegi Maisel Maisel Abbas. We want to emulate, because you don't have that target in mind, you're not going to get as far as you could go. That's a long term, but that doesn't mean, okay, it's 10:20 by 10:25. I don't know if anybody ever saw, they used to sell these posters. I haven't seen them recently. The 13 Midos of Rabbi Saul Salanter. So that poster was false on several accounts. First of all, it wasn't Rabbi Saul Salanter. It was the Sefer Cheshbon HaNefesh. 13 Midos of Sefer Cheshbon HaNefesh. Rabbi Saul Salanter financed a reprinting of the Sefer Cheshbon HaNefesh and wrote a Hakdama to it. So he promoted the Sefer. So I guess you could say he kind of gave a shtickle Haskama to it. But however, I believe, based on my research, I can't be 100% sure, that it's really the 13 Midos of Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin wrote an autobiography, and there's a section in the autobiography where he decided to become the perfect human being. So the first step to becoming the perfect human being is to define what is a perfect human being. And he came up with 13 midos. And those are the exact same 13 midos of the Sefer Cheshbon HaNefesh. Benjamin Franklin was historically first. And the 13 midos are not what you would typically find, although they all have basis in Chazal, but some of them are not what you typically find in the earlier swarm, like Orach HaTzaddikim and things like that. There was one, thrift, kmitzus. Now, we know there's such a thing. You know, Yaakov Avinu was chozal pachim ketanim, and this, but this is one of the 13 midos. You don't find that so much. There's another one, nikias. He doesn't mean the nikias of the Mesiras Yesharim. He means physical cleanliness. So we know, Chazal say, when Hillel went to take a bath, he said he's performing a mitzvah. But still, you know, so I think it probably came from Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin was a brilliant, profound thinker who was a total idiot. For such a smart guy, I can't believe what a fool he was. You know what happened with his project of becoming a perfect human being? He came up with these 13 midos. They were good enough that they ended up getting Rabbi Saul Salanter's Haskama. All right? I don't know if Rabbi Sosanta knew it came from Benjamin Franklin, but still, it's pretty good. He embarked on this project of implementing these 13 midos and becoming the perfect human being, and after 30 days, he gave up. He said he just got frustrated. He couldn't do it. And just, he said, when he thought he was making some progress, he started feeling very proud of himself, and one of the 13 midos was anava, humility, and then he says, there it goes. How in the world did he think he could become a perfect human being in 30 days? What a stupidity. Such a genius. It's amazing. Such a genius. And he expected in 30 days, everything's perfect. So that's what I'm warning you against. That's Hatzasa Yetzer. That's Hatzasa Yetzer. He gave in to Hatzasa Yetzer. You can't be perfect in 30 days. It isn't worth the effort. It's not a 30-day job to become perfect. So you got to keep in the struggle. And it's a lifetime project. But every step along the way is extremely valuable and extremely precious in the eyes of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And if it were only halfway as precious in our own eyes, we would never give up on anything. We would be so excited about what we were doing. So that's really, you know, the... the attitude we need to absorb and inculcate. If a person is mature enough to get married, who's this Nogaya? What right does he have to wait until he's 24? He's allowing himself to be in greater makom nisayon, as more likely to get more averus than if married. Again, a lot of that depends on a person's personal circumstances and so on. Sometimes that is a cheshbon, you know, but, it depends on the circumstances. But don't think that getting married is a person thinks that, you know, he's getting married to solve his own personal problems. I think that's a very dangerous foundation for marriage. Mm-hmm. It might be a side effect or a side benefit, but, you know, then he's probably not mature enough to get married. But, you know, marriage is something much different than that. And, you know, I'm not denying that this can on occasion be a cheshbon, but you could do a lot of other averus when you get married. So, and it's not a magic solution either. But the fact of the matter is that, being mature enough to get married means being ready to enter into a relationship where you're ready to give and not to take. That was Rosh Hashanah's one-line summary of marriage. Marriage is about giving, not about taking. If a person is entering into marriage for his own personal needs and benefits, he's entering marriage to take and not to give, and that's a recipe for disaster. So, it isn't as simple as that. Now, of course, there's a lot of tumulting going on today with the so-called Shidduch crisis, and I mean, the Rosh Hashanah was approached on this. Goes back, I remember how many years, I know we were already in the new building. The first effort to get a letter from the Gedolim was actually spearheaded by Rav Shmuel Berenbaum, Zatzal. But he didn't want to sign the letter until he had the Rosh Hashiva's opinion. He was very much machshav of the Rosh Hashiva. So a delegation came. I ended up meeting with them to do the intake with his delegation with their whole argument. So I must admit, I entered this meeting as an extreme skeptic. They were talking about this age gap as if that made any difference. But they were very persuasive. They went through all the statistics and the interviews. Of course, it was extremely insulting, I might add. They did this very extensive interviews of all these kinds of yeshivas and Beis Yaakovs and see what happens, and who's not married and how long. And they even included an interview with Shevach High School, which is the Beis Yaakov High School in Kew Gardens Hills. But Chavetz Chaim was not part of the interview. So I said, if you ignored Kew Gardens Hills, you didn't know that Queens existed, it wouldn't have bothered me. But you already interviewed Shevach and not us? I told him that. I made him very uncomfortable. He didn't really have an answer, you know. Like, we couldn't get to everybody. But Lemaisa, we went to the Rosh Hashiva, and Rosh Hashiva said two things. He said, first of all, if you push guys to get married younger, people get married before they're ready, and you might solve the Shidduch crisis and end up with a get crisis. And the second thing he said is, who's taking achrayus for all the Torah that's going to be lost? He didn't say definitively that it's not worth it, but he said, who's taking that achrayus? He said, I'm not taking that achrayus. There is, you know, a person when he gets married has more tirdus, the learning isn't as strong, which is the reason why we wait in the first place. And very often people can only learn X number of years after they get married. If they get married a year earlier or 2 years earlier, they're going to leave the yeshiva a year earlier or 2 years earlier. So Rashid said he's not ready to take achrayus for that. And the underlying, you know, concept behind the 24, just where the magic number of 24 comes from, it fundamentally is based on a rush in Kedushin. The rush says that if a person is learning Torah, even though the Gemara says you should get married at 18, by the way, but the rush says if a person is learning Torah, he's allowed to delay it. So the Taz says, okay, you're allowed to delay it, but it can't be indefinitely because the Gemara, in the same Gemara, says, Misha nafshel chasheka b'torah kiben azai, is pater from the mitzvah pruvu, he doesn't have to get married at all. So that's ben azai, but everybody else is mechuyv to get married, so it doesn't mean indefinitely, there must be a gvul. But he doesn't say what the gvul is. So there's a letter from the Chavetz Chaim, who was a great man, who said that the age is 25. So Shiva said, if you have to get married by 25, regardless, even if it's going to impact your learning, so you have to do reasonable hishtadlus to get married at 25. Shiva said, misfar, a year is a reasonable hishtadlus. What's interesting is when these guys did these surveys, they discovered that the average time between for a boy, the girls is different, starts going on until he gets married is 0.95 years. So Shiva was pretty much on target with his estimate without the statistics. So that's the background behind it. Having said that, if a person feels that he's having difficult nisyanos and he really has an attitude, he's not of approaching marriage with a proper perspective, it's certainly something you should discuss with his rebbeim. There might be a sort to get to go out earlier. And, it was never the case that Rishiva said you must wait to 24. It was a heter to wait till 24. But the person has to know what his own personal circumstances. What else do we have here? Messias Sisharim says that the clothing a person wears should be mechubadim, avalom mefu'arim. What is the geder of mefu'arim? You're talking to the wrong guy.
What does that mean?
I'm not too good at this. Let me put it to you this way. When my daughter got married a few years ago, so nobody in my family trusted me to buy a tie for the wedding. So Rabbi Kier over there bought a tie, and my other son-in-law bought me a tie, and my wife bought me a tie. So now I had three ties for the wedding. So then they said to me, so which one do you want to wear? So I said, you guys don't trust me to buy the tie. You want me to pick which one I'm going to wear? You pick which one I'm going to wear. I think, though, in a... What? You want it? But I think in a general sense, I would say that anything that's cutting edge, it's the latest fashion, this is like this, this. That's already extreme chash of being over the line. Anything that draws excessive attention.
That's mefuarim or mefuarim?
Yeah, no, that's beyond mefuarim. That's achlo mefuarim.
Mefuarim is...
It's not so good. So that's, I think it's a bit much. Anything that attracts a lot of attention. There's a concept of sneeze. It's not just for women. A person isn't supposed to be the center of attention because of the way he dresses. If you become the center of attention, it should be because of your accomplishments and substance, not because of chitzonius. So if a person dresses in a way that's cutting edge, that's very fancy, that's very, eye-catching, I think Rabbi Wiener once put it that, the Rishiva actually encouraged people to wear ties. Young people typically don't. He said, but you could wear a tie that's just as bad. He's not wearing it. Sometimes, he says, you see a person coming in the door wearing a tie. And sometimes you see a tie coming in the door attached to a person. So you could see a person coming in the door wearing mechubadika clothing. Sometimes you see the clothing walking in the door and you realize that there must be a person there, because most clothing can't walk by themselves. So that is a shtickle, you know, over the line. How that translates in practice, you know, it's hard to say the exact lines, but I think you could get a sense, and the person, you know, should try to stay within those. If you're misupik, you probably shouldn't wear it.
Was this rule written for one person? It was written like as a gauge.
It was written for everybody, you know.
I'm saying it means when the Mishnah Sharm wrote it, he had one kavona in mind.
I don't know what exact dress mode he had in mind, but he had a guy.
In his mind, he had one kavona.
I don't know what you mean by that.
Meaning, did he say like, I don't know if it's like a, I don't know. Let's just use colors for a second, right? If it's red.
No, I don't know. Before, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know what anything specific. If he did have something specific in mind, he didn't tell us, so. It would be pure speculation. I did have a Rebbe in elementary school once. He was a kind of an interesting character, but that, for many reasons. But one time a kid walked into class, had the misfortune of walking into class with a red shirt. You mentioned the red, you know. So he looks at the boy and says, "The reason why I'm not throwing you out of the yeshiva is because I am sure that you don't know the Gemara. You quoted the Gemara someplace. It said that people used to wear red shirts for Avodah Zarah. So I'm sure you don't know the Gemara that red shirt is Avodah Zarah. But you need to go home and change." This was in seventh grade. He was kind of interesting. He used to, every recess, he used to have this like sponge cake with tea. And he used to take the sponge cake and crunch it into a ball to determine whether it was kezias, if he needed to make a bracha achrona. I guess he held, you know, the airspace doesn't kind of know the halach exactly. It was always a tema to me, like, after the first 20 or 30 times, don't you already know? It's the same sponge cake every single day. Like, don't you already get what size crunches into a thing? I could never figure that out. But he was a memorable character. He used to give prizes. He used to ask us these challenging questions and give us, I don't know if you call them cash prizes. They were money prizes, but he had an arrangement with a certain Svarim store. You could only spend it in the Svarim store. You could buy Svarim with it or whatever, books, Hebrew books, and so on. But he used to give out these cash prizes, but it generated a certain amount of excitement. So one time he offered $100 prize. Now we're talking, I don't know if I should tell you the year, but a long time ago. $100 is probably kind of like $1,000 or maybe $2,000, maybe even more than that today. So it's like a $2,000 prize. And the deal was, you could answer the question, I'll give you until tomorrow. So I figured I'm in the money. I'm going to go home and ask my father, you know, the thing. Unfortunately for me, some guys are a little more zrizistic than that. And during recess, they went to the principal's office to ask him the question. So he knew that this Rebbe used to give out prizes. And it isn't exactly normal behavior for seventh graders to come into the principal's office during recess to ask him some questions and learning. So he realized right away what happened. So he went and told the Rebbe. So then he canceled. He said, "You have to answer before the end of class today." So nobody got the answer. It was one of those questions nobody was going to answer. I don't remember what it was, but nobody got the answer. But he gave out quite a bit of money with those cash prizes.
So you have a guy who's very into people are into different things. So some people who are just dress is at the bottom of the list, and some people who dress in the middle, and some people who dress at the top of the list. So where was the Mesilas Sharm? Where was his, like, how did he?
It's a guideline for everybody. It's like anything else in life. Some people, certain things are more different. You know, I once had a Hashkafah session in Blatcher, and the guy was giving me a hard time, like being very black and white. If a person in a certain behavior, whatever it was, and he knows it's wrong, he does it anyway. he must be a Rasha, he must be a Chisar in his Emuna. How can you explain it? This? That's not the way it is. Things are difficult. No, it can't be. It's going on. I happen to know that this guy had not the greatest minyan attendance in the morning. Because I get the attendance sheet. So I said, let me give you a mashal. Some people have trouble getting up in the morning and they miss minyan. Do they think it's right? Yeah, they know they're supposed to come to minyan and yet they don't come to minyan. What does that mean? That means they're rishayim? That means they're not maminim? So he pauses for a moment and he says, that's different. So I said, why is that different? Because that's hard. What that means is, for some people, they're not into their dress, so they don't have that nisayon that they have to wear the fanciest clothes and the mefarim. It's not a nisayon for them. No, maybe they have a nisayon the other way. They would dress like a slob, and they're not mechubadim. Then you have a guy who's in the middle, so it's a moderate nisayon. The guy who's really into clothing, then it's a hard nisayon. It's not different standards for different people. A person who's more into clothing, therefore has a heter to dress mefarim, and a person who's not into clothing, therefore doesn't have to be mechubad. Everybody has the same standard. It's just for some people this end is easier, some people that end is easier, because everyone has a different personality. And what's a hard nisayon for you might be easy for me, and what's hard for me might be easy for you. That's part of life.
Different articles of, like, I don't want to use articles of clothing, but there are different articles. Like for me, I'm not saying for a person, the ugliest tie would be the most mechubad tie for the guy at the bottom who's. I mean, a guy who's machshav dress at the bottom of his list. So for him, a tie, which for a guy who at the top of the list thinks is really disgusting, for the guy at the bottom of the list thinks he's...
I don't think that's true. He just doesn't care. I mean, some people don't, you know, there are different tastes. You know, there's always certain different personal tastes. I don't think that's really good. It's some guy, you know, who dresses is not important to him, so he doesn't pay attention to these things, and he doesn't have a sense of what's... Maybe it's hard for him to figure out what's mechubad or not. And some the other way around, it gets hard for him to give up on things which he thinks are really classy and cutting edge, and you know, it's different nisyonos, different strokes for different folks. There's different nisyonos for different people. There are different tastes also. This guy likes blue ties. This guy likes gray ties. This guy likes red ties. You know, of course, there's different tastes. But within the zone of mechuban and mefuarim, that's a standard for everybody. For some people, it's easier. Some people, it's harder. Like anything else in life. It's not it's not different than any of the Nishan Sakai.
Why is this different than like a healthy outlet? Like, let's say playing basketball. Some people like playing basketball. Some people, their outlet is dress.
Because dress is it may not be as healthy an outlet. That's the difference. That's what he's saying. Because it speaks, look at me, attract attention, gaiva. Not that a person can't have gaiva in his basketball. You know, you could have gaiva in anything. But that's really where the Messiah talks about. He talks about in Anova. He's talking about humility. So humility does not mean that you're a shmata. You have to have dignity. You mechubadim, but not mefuarim. Mefuarim is really fancy and really shtatzi. So that means, what does that say? Look at me. Look at me. Look. That's the dress is an advertisement. It's a certain gaiva.
So if a guy plays basketball for that reason, like, oh,
yeah, that's a problem. Yeah, then that's not such a healthy outlet either. But I never had that problem. I wasn't good enough in basketball. I was once a basketball coach, though. When I was in 12th grade, our Hanhola allowed us to organize a basketball team, but they had nothing to do with it. The 12th graders organized the team to pay other yeshivas. So it was my friends and I, you know, I was part of the circles organizing the team. Some of my friends were very good basketball players. So I would have been on the team just because, you know, they're my buddies. But I wouldn't have gotten any playing time because I don't want to lose the game. So I said, what's the use of being on the team just to sit on the bench the whole time? You know, come on when we're like up by 20 points or down by 20 points. You know, so I decided, I volunteered to be the coach. So everyone was happy with that. And we were 4-1, I think. We were a pretty good team. Our star was Chaim Meza. I don't know if anybody here knows everybody. Eli Meza, but Yisrael Meza is an older brother. Chaim Meza was a very good ball player. And some other people, I don't know if I should mention, Rabbi Avraham Baruch Rausch. He was a very good... You guys know that he was a good ball player. He was on the team. And that's a highlight of my coaching career. There's two highlights. One was we had this really, really close game, and I borrowed a page from Red Holtzman. You guys probably don't know who he is. You know who Red Holtzman is? He was a coach of the New York Knicks, I think the last time they won a championship. It could be. When I was in high school, they won a championship. I don't think they've won since then. I'm not sure. I wouldn't swear to it, but I don't think so. But so he had a player by the name of Phil Jackson. So Phil Jackson was really a forward. But in the last seconds of play, and if the other team was inbounding the ball, he put him in a guard position. He had very long arms, and he would harass the guy who was inbounding the thing. He was very good at it. And they often couldn't get a play going. They had to inbound, and they only had a few seconds to play with. So we had a game. It was tied with a few seconds to go. And I put in my backup center, who was all of 6'2". And I put him in the backcourt to guard against the inbounds pass. And it worked. We forced them to inbound there's a few seconds, I think it was 6 seconds left. We forced them to inbound the ball into the backcourt. The guy took a shot from halfway in the court, and he hit the shot. So the strategy worked. And then the referee disallowed the basket because he said there was a 3-second violation. Somebody was in the lane. And we won in overtime. But then the rematch, we killed them. So that was the highlight of my coaching career. But the fact of the matter is, a person could engage in it for the wrong reasons. You know, if he's out there to win and to show everybody how good he is, and it puts down anybody who can't live up to his, his standards, of other, he could use that as a vehicle for gaiva, many other things. But it's not inherently, gaiva. It's exercise, it's entertainment, it's relaxation. It's not inherently gaiva. Anything could be done for good reasons or bad reasons. But fancy clothing is inherently, a message of gaiva.
Did any of things by man is because of the
symbol of gaiva? Well, that's what the Mesillas Yesharim is talking about. It's more than that. That's part of it. But it's part of it is the basic concept that a person is supposed to have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's doing the right things because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, boy, it's getting late. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to do it, and not because he needs other people to know about it, or needs other people to have opinions about it, and people have to think he's great. And it's related to gaiva, it's related to other things too, but the midah v'atznei aleches is for everybody. Okay, Rabbi Osman, I think we should have a marav.